Hello, this is the Pearson EdExcel International GCSE English as a Second Language, Paper 2R Listening Test, Summer 2017. This test is in three parts. You will hear three extracts and will have to answer questions on what you hear. At the beginning of each extract, there will be a pause to give you time to read the questions. You will hear all three parts twice. Write your answers in the spaces in your question booklet as you listen. Part 1. In this part, you will hear a school principal talking about Open Day. Listen and complete the notes. Write no more than three words for each answer. One mark will be awarded for each completed answer. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Welcome, everyone. My name is Stephen Wilson. I'm the principal of Stratton School, and it's my great pleasure to welcome all prospective students and their parents to this Open Day. We value your interest in our school, and we hope you'll get a feel for the way we operate as you move around today. There are demonstrations going on throughout the day, but to make the most of your visit, I'd like to highlight a number of events that you may like to attend. To begin with, there's a wonderful display of books in the library, and at 10:30, the library staff will be holding a literature quiz. If you missed that, they've organised a book treasure hunt for the afternoon, starting at 2:00. The music department is holding a percussion workshop throughout the day, which you are most welcome to attend to try out some of the instruments. There are also performances by the school orchestra in the morning and one by the choir in the afternoon. The first is at 11:30 and the second at 2:30. The music department is in the art centre. Also in the art centre, you'll find the drama studios, located on the ground floor. Extracts from recent school productions, including this year's school musical, Pirates, will be performed at 12 noon and 12:30. This afternoon, from 1:30 onwards, there'll be video clips presented by the Stratton School Film Unit on the theme of local industry. We are very proud of this department's reputation for producing high-quality recordings, and we hope you'll drop in and see their work. I'd also recommend that you make some time to visit our sports centre to see our fantastic facilities and wide range of sporting activities. There's a lot going on there today, including a girls' inter-house basketball tournament and a boys' football match with a neighbouring school. For those of you who'd like to get involved, in the afternoon, there are taster sessions of several of the less common but interesting sports we offer here at Stratton School. For more details and times, please check the notice board in the entrance to the sports centre. And now to our newly opened science block. I would urge you to see what's happening there today. The staff and students are running three walk-in experiments from 11:30 onwards. The physics department is conducting one on energy sources. There is another, run by the chemistry department on crystals, and a third, by the biology department on the subjects of eye colour and eyesight. There are also some very interesting displays on plants by our students in Year 7 and 8. Then you might want to make your way to the main hall, where the Modern Foreign Languages department is running an international cafe throughout the day. Here, you'll be able to sample the delights of French croissants and Spanish tapas. There's also a range of hot and cold drinks on offer. For those of you in need of something more substantial, a hot meal will be available in the dining room from 12 to 1. After this introduction, please would you head to reception, where you'll find student tour guides waiting to show you the school and answer your questions. Teaching staff are also on hand in the various departments if you have any academic issues that you wish to raise. Just a quick word about health and safety. In the event of an emergency, where an evacuation is required, a fire alarm will sound. Please exit the building immediately and report to your nearest assembly point. These are clearly signposted throughout the school. The main visitor toilet facilities are found adjacent to the art centre. And a reminder, smoking is not permitted anywhere in the buildings and grounds. Finally, each department can deal with minor injuries such as cuts and scrapes, but for anything more serious, please go to the first aid room just next to the administration office. Just before you go, the admissions team will be here in this room throughout the day, and they'll be able to help you with questions about enrollment, transport, uniform, or fees. We hope you enjoy this open day and that you see how enthusiastic the staff and students are about our school. Thank you.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Welcome, everyone. My name is Stephen Wilson. I'm the principal of Stratton School, and it's my great pleasure to welcome all prospective students and their parents to this open day. We value your interest in our school, and we hope you'll get a feel for the way we operate as you move around today. There are demonstrations going on throughout the day, but to make the most of your visit, I'd like to highlight a number of events that you may like to attend. To begin with, there's a wonderful display of books in the library, and at 10:30, the library staff will be holding a literature quiz. If you missed that, they've organised a book treasure hunt for the afternoon, starting at 2 o'clock. The music department is holding a percussion workshop throughout the day, which you are most welcome to attend to try out some of the instruments. There are also performances by the school orchestra in the morning and one by the choir in the afternoon. The first is at 11:30 and the second at 2:30. The music department is in the Art Centre. Also in the Art Centre, you'll find the drama studios, located on the ground floor. Extracts from recent school productions, including this year's school musical, Pirates, will be performed at 12 noon and 12:30. This afternoon, from 1:30 onwards, there'll be video clips presented by the Stratton School Film Unit on the theme of local industry. We are very proud of this department's reputation for producing high-quality recordings, and we hope you'll drop in and see their work. I'd also recommend that you make some time to visit our sports centre to see our fantastic facilities and wide range of sporting activities. There's a lot going on there today, including a girls' inter-house basketball tournament and a boys' football match with a neighbouring school. For those of you who'd like to get involved, in the afternoon, there are taster sessions of several of the less common but interesting sports we offer here at Stratton School. For more details and times, please check the notice board in the entrance to the sports centre. And now to our newly opened science block. I would urge you to see what's happening there today. The staff and students are running three walk-in experiments from 11:30 onwards. The physics department is conducting one on energy sources. There is another, run by the chemistry department on crystals, and a third, by the biology department on the subjects of eye colour and eyesight. There are also some very interesting displays on plants by our students in Year 7 and 8. Then you might want to make your way to the main hall, where the Modern Foreign Languages department is running an international cafe throughout the day. Here, you'll be able to sample the delights of French croissants and Spanish tapas. There's also a range of hot and cold drinks on offer. For those of you in need of something more substantial, a hot meal will be available in the dining room from 12 to 1. After this introduction, please would you head to reception, where you'll find student tour guides waiting to show you the school and answer your questions. Teaching staff are also on hand in the various departments if you have any academic issues that you wish to raise. Just a quick word about health and safety. In the event of an emergency, where an evacuation is required, a fire alarm will sound. Please exit the building immediately and report to your nearest assembly point. These are clearly signposted throughout the school. The main visitor toilet facilities are found adjacent to the art centre. And a reminder, smoking is not permitted anywhere in the buildings and grounds. Finally, each department can deal with minor injuries such as cuts and scrapes, but for anything more serious, please go to the first aid room just next to the administration office. Just before you go, the admissions team will be here in this room throughout the day, and they'll be able to help you with questions about enrollment, transport, uniform, or fees. We hope you enjoy this open day and that you see how enthusiastic the staff and students are about our school. Thank you.
That's the end of part one. Now turn to part two. Part two. In this part, you will hear an interview with a chocolate maker. Listen and answer the questions. Write no more than three words for each answer. One mark will be awarded for each completed answer. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Hello and welcome to Small Business Weekly. I'm Victoria Simmons. In the studio today, we're looking at starting a small business overseas. And it's my pleasure to welcome Marcus Strickland, a Scottish chocolate maker who is based in Ecuador. Welcome, Marcus.
Thank you, Victoria.
Let's begin by talking about how your company started.
I'd lived in Ecuador in the 1990s, firstly as a student and then as an engineer. In 2001, I went back to Scotland to attend cookery school. Whilst there, I got the idea of starting a chocolate business and began experimenting at home. We did some test marketing trips to Ecuador in 2005 and 2006 and found there was a good market for chocolate. I'd always wanted to go back, and so we moved to Ecuador as a family in August 2007 and set up our chocolate business there.
So tell me, what's the focus of your company?
Well, the focus of my Ecuador-based company, Casa Luca Chocolates, is to provide high-quality, sophisticated bonbons and chocolate products for the local people, using almost all local ingredients. I source real vanilla and coloured cocoa butters from suppliers in Brazil. In 2008, after a year in Ecuador, I decided to open a second company, Pacha Fine Chocolates.
Oh, really? Can you tell us a bit about why this came about?
Sure. I wanted to provide American customers with top quality handmade chocolate products, where all the ingredients could be traced back directly to the individual Ecuadorian grower. We started exporting to the United States and retailed our products through the website. We also worked with advertisers with a view to getting our message of traceability across. I felt it was important to expand Ecuador's role in the chocolate industry from one of simply producing and exporting cocoa beans to one where it was exporting the finished product to an international market. Unfortunately, I think the message was not compelling enough for consumers, and what I envisaged as a top-quality artisan product made in Ecuador simply ended up being seen as just another consumer product once it was in the United States. But we weren't able to launch a huge marketing campaign, unlike others who have successfully managed to tap into the idea of a world community of producers and consumers.
Oh, that's a shame. But I understand that there is another venture you are now involved in.
Yes, indeed. I act as a chocolate expert for chocolate tours.
Oh, a chocolate expert. That sounds great. What does that involve?
Yes, it is great. I absolutely love it. I'm currently working with 3 tour operators in Ecuador, offering 3 to 5 day tours. We take professional groups on visits to artisan chocolate makers and to plantations, fermentation and drying centres, and to cocoa traders. We always finish with chocolate tasting sessions. I've also been hired to work as a chocolate expert for a well-known online chocolate school, which will be offering a professional course for chocolate makers in June next year.
So, moving on, what are some of the challenges that you have encountered while running your businesses?
Well, it hasn't been easy, that's for sure. Ecuadorian bureaucracy is hard to fathom, but you get there in the end. Things just take ages to sort out, and you have to be relentless and have endless patience. I make use of the services of an agent to sort out permits and tax issues. This certainly makes my life easier. Something that took getting used to was what you need to do to get paid. No one uses the post here, and electronic payments are the exception, not the rule. Most companies pay from 2 to 4 on Friday afternoons at their offices. So, if you can't make it to pick up your cheque, you have to wait another week to get paid. Fortunately, I have enough business now and a unique product, so it's cash on delivery. That is, if you want the product, you pay for it when we arrive at your door, with few exceptions only, for long-standing clients.
That sounds very sensible. And how do you keep up to date with new developments in chocolate?
I mostly use the web to learn about what's going on in the chocolate world. In Ecuador, I have regular contact with people in the cocoa and chocolate industry, from growers to manufacturers of chocolate and semi-processed products such as paste and powder. We've recently formed a group called the Chocolate Lab. This is a forum where we share ideas on encouraging improvements in professional standards and links between the various sectors.
Oh, that's an interesting initiative. So, what is it that you find fascinating about chocolate?
Well, I've always found it fascinating, but I didn't really get a good understanding of how to work with chocolate in cookery school, so I got some books and started to study on my own. There are very few sources that clearly explain the scientific processes behind successfully working with chocolate, but after all the reading, I was finally able to get my head around it. I now appreciate just how wonderful chocolate is to work with.
And just one more question. When did you finally get an insight into the secret of chocolate?
I never really understood what chocolate was and how its flavour was developed until I went to a plantation and tasted several chocolate pastes made from beans grown in different areas. The beans had been roasted using different techniques. I sampled them, one after the other, and suddenly realized how important it is to match the right bean with the right roast. It was a light bulb moment. Now, when I taste chocolate, I have a much better idea in my head of what's good or off about a chocolate's flavour.
Thank you, Marcus, for talking to us today.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Hello and welcome to Small Business Weekly. I'm Victoria Simmons. In the studio today, we're looking at starting a small business overseas. And it's my pleasure to welcome Marcus Strickland, a Scottish chocolate maker who is based in Ecuador. Welcome, Marcus.
Thank you, Victoria.
Let's begin by talking about how your company started.
I'd lived in Ecuador in the 1990s, firstly as a student and then as an engineer. In 2001, I went back to Scotland to attend cookery school. Whilst there, I got the idea of starting a chocolate business and began experimenting at home. We did some test marketing trips to Ecuador in 2005 and 2006 and found there was a good market for chocolate. I'd always wanted to go back, and so we moved to Ecuador as a family in August 2007 and set up our chocolate business there.
So tell me, what's the focus of your company?
Well, the focus of my Ecuador-based company, Casa Luca Chocolates, is to provide high-quality, sophisticated bonbons and chocolate products for the local people, using almost all local ingredients. I source real vanilla and coloured cocoa butters from suppliers in Brazil. In 2008, after a year in Ecuador, I decided to open a second company, Pacha Fine Chocolates.
Oh, really? Can you tell us a bit about why this came about?
Sure. I wanted to provide American customers with top-quality handmade chocolate products, where all the ingredients could be traced back directly to the individual Ecuadorian grower. We started exporting to the United States and retailed our products through the website. We also worked with advertisers with a view to getting our message of traceability across. I felt it was important to expand Ecuador's role in the chocolate industry from one of simply producing and exporting cocoa beans to one where it was exporting the finished product to an international market. Unfortunately, I think the message was not compelling enough for consumers, and what I envisaged as a top-quality artisan product made in Ecuador simply ended up being seen as just another consumer product once it was in the United States. But we weren't able to launch a huge marketing campaign, unlike others who have successfully managed to tap into the idea of a world community of producers and consumers.
Oh, that's a shame. But I understand that there is another venture you are now involved in.
Yes, indeed. I act as a chocolate expert for chocolate tours.
Oh, a chocolate expert. That sounds great. What does that involve?
Yes, it is great. I absolutely love it. I'm currently working with three tour operators in Ecuador, offering 3 to 5 day tours. We take professional groups on visits to artisan chocolate makers and to plantations, fermentation and drying centres, and to cocoa traders. We always finish with chocolate tasting sessions. I've also been hired to work as a chocolate expert for a well-known online chocolate school, which will be offering a professional course for chocolate makers in June next year.
So, moving on, what are some of the challenges that you have encountered while running your businesses?
Well, it hasn't been easy, that's for sure. Ecuadorian bureaucracy is hard to fathom, but you get there in the end. Things just take ages to sort out, and you have to be relentless and have endless patience. I make use of the services of an agent to sort out permits and tax issues. This certainly makes my life easier. Something that took getting used to was what you need to do to get paid. No one uses the post here, and electronic payments are the exception, not the rule. Most companies pay from 2 to 4 on Friday afternoons at their offices. So, if you can't make it to pick up your cheque, you have to wait another week to get paid. Fortunately, I have enough business now and a unique product, so it's cash on delivery. That is, if you want the product, you pay for it when we arrive at your door, with few exceptions only, for long-standing clients.
That sounds very sensible. And how do you keep up to date with new developments in chocolate?
I mostly use the web to learn about what's going on in the chocolate world. In Ecuador, I have regular contact with people in the cocoa and chocolate industry, from growers to manufacturers of chocolate and semi-processed products such as paste and powder. We've recently formed a group called the Chocolate Lab. This is a forum where we share ideas on encouraging improvements in professional standards and links between the various sectors.
Oh, that's an interesting initiative. So, what is it that you find fascinating about chocolate?
Well, I've always found it fascinating, but I didn't really get a good understanding of how to work with chocolate in cookery school. So, I got some books and started to study on my own. There are very few sources that clearly explain the scientific processes behind successfully working with chocolate. But after all the reading, I was finally able to get my head around it. I now appreciate just how wonderful chocolate is to work with.
And just one more question. When did you finally get an insight into the secret of chocolate?
I never really understood what chocolate was and how its flavour was developed until I went to a plantation and tasted several chocolate pastes made from beans grown in different areas. The beans had been roasted using different techniques. I sampled them, one after the other, and suddenly realised how important it is to match the right bean with the right roast. It was a light bulb moment. Now, when I taste chocolate, I have a much better idea in my head of what's good or off about a chocolate's flavour.
Thank you, Marcus, for talking to us today.
That's the end of part two. Now turn to part three. Part three. In this part, you will hear an extract from a radio program about sleep. Listen and complete the sentences. Write no more than three words for each answer. One mark will be awarded for each completed sentence. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Familiar as it is, sleep remains a mystery. No one doubts it is important for good physical and mental health, but there's still a lot we don't know about why we sleep. One way to understand human sleep is to study sleep in animals. All mammals and birds, as well as most reptiles, amphibians, and fish, and even insects undergo something which may be described as sleep, although sometimes it appears to be very different from our usual concept of it. As for mammals, both human and non-human, they all undergo a state of sleep known as REM, or rapid eye movement. When the eyes move, the body becomes restless, and there are increased levels of brain activity. This state of sleep is also associated with dreams. However, it will never be known if animals dream during REM sleep, as humans do. Birds go through cycles of REM sleep and non-REM sleep, much like humans and other mammals, although the cycles tend to be much shorter. For instance, non-REM sleep may last 2 to 3 minutes in each cycle, and the REM sleep state may be as short as 9 or 10 seconds in each cycle. Also, birds do not tend to lose muscle tone and go limp during sleep, like most mammals, which allows them to sleep while standing or perched in a tree. Many birds can function quite well on hundreds of micro-sleeps of just a few seconds each, and their sleep times can be reduced by as much as 70% during periods of migration with little or no ill effects. Some birds, such as chickens and blackbirds, and aquatic mammals, including certain dolphins, whales, and seals, can even sleep with just one half of their brain. The other half of their brain, along with one open eye, remains alert for predators. This can be an advantage for creatures in areas with high numbers of predators, for birds that spend long periods migrating, and for marine mammals that need to surface regularly to breathe. A wide variety of postures is adopted for sleeping. These range from the curled-up position of cats, dogs, and many other mammals to the upside-down hanging technique of bats. Some animals adopt very uncomfortable sleeping positions to avoid predators. The golden dormouse carefully balances itself on the branch of a tree to sleep, and any movements of the twig wakes it up immediately. One species of baboon sleeps at the tops of trees on its heels, making it difficult to get a sound sleep. Most land animals lie down to sleep, as their muscles go limp, although horses can lock their legs and sleep standing up. They lie down only for the short periods of REM sleep. The flamingo even manages to sleep while balancing on one leg. The length of sleep also varies. As a rule of thumb, animals that tend to sleep in relatively safe locations, such as underground burrows, rather than in the open, tend to sleep longer. Typically, herbivores, animals which feed on grasses, sleep less than carnivores, meat eaters, partly because they need longer to find and eat food. On the other hand, top of the food chain animals like lions and tigers, which have little fear of predators and often consume huge meals at one sitting, can afford to spend much of their day sleeping. Generally speaking, those species which have greater total sleep times tend also to have higher body temperatures. Also, as a general rule, at least among herbivores, larger animals sleep less than smaller ones, although their individual sleep cycles tend to be longer. Hibernation would appear to be similar to sleep. However, it is actually a quite different phenomenon. It is a long-term state of inactivity during cold periods, in which an animal's body temperature and metabolism are reduced. However, when animals hibernate, their brain waves are very similar to those seen when they are awake. Hibernation may reduce the need for sleep to a limited extent, but it does not in any way replace or remove it. And animals newly emerged from hibernation still need the more functional and restorative benefits of sleep. Some animals may even interrupt their hibernation once or twice during the winter in order to sleep. Sleep is also found in a number of insects. The sleep patterns of honeybees have been studied extensively, and they show some striking similarities to those in mammals, insofar as honeybees have distinctive stages of sleep, and they also need to catch up on sleep. When humans do not get enough sleep over long periods, there are numerous negative consequences, such as an inability to focus or memory loss. Similarly, sleep-deprived bees show a reduced ability to communicate sources of food to members of the colony, which could, in some instances, put the colony's survival at risk. Octopuses have been found to have brain waves that are generally associated with REM sleep. These brain waves also indicate that they go through sleep cycles much like humans and other vertebrates. Octopuses, both those in captivity and in the wild, crawl into their homes, narrow their eyes, and remain still for long periods of time. Every once in a while, for about 15 minutes, they will rapidly change colour and shift the position of their tentacles. Scientists once assumed they were waking to check on their surroundings, but now believe that this movement is evidence of REM sleep. Next week, we look at variations in sleep patterns among humans in different parts of the world.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Familiar as it is, sleep remains a mystery. No one doubts it is important for good physical and mental health, but there's still a lot we don't know about why we sleep. One way to understand human sleep is to study sleep in animals. All mammals and birds, as well as most reptiles, amphibians, and fish, and even insects, undergo something which may be described as sleep, although sometimes it appears to be very different from our usual concept of it. As for mammals, both human and non-human, they all undergo a state of sleep known as REM, or rapid eye movement, when the eyes move, the body becomes restless, and there are increased levels of brain activity. This state of sleep is also associated with dreams. However, it will never be known if animals dream during REM sleep, as humans do. Birds go through cycles of REM sleep and non-REM sleep, much like humans and other mammals, although the cycles tend to be much shorter. For instance, non-REM sleep may last 2 to 3 minutes in each cycle, and the REM sleep state may be as short as 9 or 10 seconds in each cycle. Also, birds do not tend to lose muscle tone and go limp during sleep, like most mammals, which allows them to sleep while standing or perched in a tree. Many birds can function quite well on hundreds of micro-sleeps of just a few seconds each, and their sleep times can be reduced by as much as 70% during periods of migration with little or no ill effects. Some birds, such as chickens and blackbirds, and aquatic mammals, including certain dolphins, whales, and seals, can even sleep with just one half of their brain. The other half of their brain, along with one open eye, remains alert for predators. This can be an advantage for creatures in areas with high numbers of predators, for birds that spend long periods migrating, and for marine mammals that need to surface regularly to breathe. A wide variety of postures is adopted for sleeping. These range from the curled-up position of cats, dogs, and many other mammals, to the upside-down hanging technique of bats. Some animals adopt very uncomfortable sleeping positions to avoid predators. The golden dormouse carefully balances itself on the branch of a tree to sleep, and any movements of the twig wakes it up immediately. One species of baboon sleeps at the tops of trees on its heels, making it difficult to get a sound sleep. Most land animals lie down to sleep, as their muscles go limp, although horses can lock their legs and sleep standing up. They lie down only for the short periods of REM sleep. The flamingo even manages to sleep while balancing on one leg. The length of sleep also varies. As a rule of thumb, animals that tend to sleep in relatively safe locations, such as underground burrows, rather than in the open, tend to sleep longer. Typically, herbivores, animals which feed on grasses, sleep less than carnivores, meat eaters, partly because they need longer to find and eat food. On the other hand, top of the food chain animals like lions and tigers, which have little fear of predators and often consume huge meals at one sitting, can afford to spend much of their day sleeping. Generally speaking, those species which have greater total sleep times tend also to have higher body temperatures. Also, as a general rule, at least among herbivores, larger animals sleep less than smaller ones, although their individual sleep cycles tend to be longer. Hibernation would appear to be similar to sleep. However, it is actually a quite different phenomenon. It is a long-term state of inactivity during cold periods, in which an animal's body temperature and metabolism are reduced. However, when animals hibernate, their brain waves are very similar to those seen when they are awake. Hibernation may reduce the need for sleep to a limited extent, but it does not in any way replace or remove it. And animals newly emerged from hibernation still need the more functional and restorative benefits of sleep. Some animals may even interrupt their hibernation once or twice during the winter in order to sleep. Sleep is also found in a number of insects. The sleep patterns of honeybees have been studied extensively, and they show some striking similarities to those in mammals, insofar as honeybees have distinctive stages of sleep, and they also need to catch up on sleep. When humans do not get enough sleep over long periods, there are numerous negative consequences, such as an inability to focus or memory loss. Similarly, sleep-deprived bees show a reduced ability to communicate sources of food to members of the colony, which could, in some instances, put the colony's survival at risk. Octopuses have been found to have brain waves that are generally associated with REM sleep. These brain waves also indicate that they go through sleep cycles much like humans and other vertebrates. Octopuses, both those in captivity and in the wild, crawl into their homes, narrow their eyes, and remain still for long periods of time. Every once in a while, for about 15 minutes, they will rapidly change colour and shift the position of their tentacles. Scientists once assumed they were waking to check on their surroundings, but now believe that this movement is evidence of REM sleep. Next week, we look at variations in sleep patterns among humans in different parts of the world.
That's the end of the test. Please wait for your question booklets to be collected. Thank you, and good luck.